Okay, so just to give you a quick rundown, I think you saw the questions that we're planning on talking about. But if there's anything else that you'd like to talk about, we can certainly do that as well. If you can send me that consent form when you get a chance.
I can do it tomorrow.
Okay, no worries. Whenever you get a chance is fine. And then we will be recording, obviously. But if there's anything that you would rather, if you say something and then you'd rather it not be in the final video, just let us know.
Yeah, no, the thing is my experience will be limited, my response will be limited because of the role that I had. Yeah, on a rogatory letter, you really are the, speaking on behalf of the judge, like you're investigating, you're sent by the judge to conduct interviews, so.
Yeah. Well, we're just looking for your perspective. So if there are any questions on there that you think are, maybe not relevant to your role, like just let me know. But yeah, we're just kind of trying to collect perspectives from a lot of different people who had different roles working on the trials. Okay, so give me just 1 second to start. Alrighty, ready?
I'm ready.
Yeah. Excellent. Okay, so first thing, can you state your name and your position with the ECCC, and then describe with a brief summary what your basic responsibilities were at the ECCC?
Yeah, my name is Isabel Granger. I'm a police officer Canadian police officer in Ottawa. My role at ECCC was as an investigator. Under a rogatory letter, I was assigned to investigate, to interview survivors and witnesses for case 4.
Great. And what brought you to the ECCC in this role?
Well, this was, Canada's first bilateral mission. I'm on the Justice Rapid Response roster. It's a small roster. There's not many people on it, but the difference with the group that was deployed from Canada was that even though we were investigating and all the other allegations or the other crimes, we also were, for me primarily, the ones where there's gender-based violence was used, for forced marriage and all the ones that were related to gender-based violence. I have, extensive experience investigating sex gender-based violence crimes.
Right. And can you, just kind of give us a sense of what your day-to-day work was like at the ACCC, insofar as you're able to talk about it?
Yes, we were on assignment there on a rogatory letter, with permission from the Cambodian government, of course, as representatives of the co-investigating judge, who is the primary investigator in such a case. And so what we would do is for two weeks of the month, I would be at the tribunal catching up with paperwork and preparing for field missions. And for 12 days of the month, I would be in field missions in various parts of Cambodia.
Very cool. So what are your thoughts on the fact that this was a hybrid court, positive and negatives of having both the national and international sides working on this?
So you were asking me about the benefits of a hybrid, the negatives and positives of a hybrid from my perspective?
Yes.
From my perspective, I was very focused. I had a particular focus. However, just from a personal opinion, I think that, because of the proximity, I think the benefit of a hybrid is that because of proximity, in that the tribunal is located in the host country, which is the country where primarily the atrocities took place, it helps. I think it assists in the preparation for post conflict. I think the people from the, you know, the citizens of the country are able to follow closely with the proceedings. Whereas if it was at The Hague, for instance, you'd have to wait for public service announcements and newspaper articles. Whereas I think it's you know, the information is readily available. But also, I think it also provides opportunities for capacity building, or especially the post conflict where the judiciary might be fledgling. So there's an opportunity because you have international partners in mission who have expertise in those areas, who can actually provide capacity building, you know, resources to the national, you know, say the police force or the judiciary. We were able to do some really good work with the Cambodian National Police, you know, an extra on a volunteer basis. And also, I think it boosts spending, because when a tribunal is established in a country, it generates a lot of outside international people from international settings that are working in, that are employed by the tribunal or assisting or stakeholders that establish within the country. Also, I think that it's seen less as an external than if it was at The Hague, for instance. And as I said before, I think it's I think one of the advantages is that the citizens can follow closely and you know, have input. The ECCC was located in the same grounds as the court itself, the court and the UNICAT, where we were at our offices, was in the same place as the court itself. So I'd often see people coming to listen to the proceedings when case two that was going on at the time. So I think it makes it accessible to people. It's usually there's a lot of healing that needs to take place as well.
Yeah, I thank you for sharing that. I think a lot of the people that we've spoken with feel the same way, that it was really helpful to have it be in the country so that people could participate. So I understand that at times the international and the Cambodian side of the ACCC, you know, maybe had some different positions. Do you have any stories you can share with us about how the two sides worked together?
I didn't see much of that. I heard, but I didn't see it, because in the field mission team, for example, I was the international, and I had four staff that went with me that were, you know, nationals. There was a historian or an analyst, transcriber, an interpreter, and a driver, and they were all Cambodian. And I was the international. And I formed some incredible relationships because every field mission, mostly went with different people, but then you there's not that many that, you know, eventually you start rotating the same people.
Great. That is certainly good to know. Okay. So are there any, you know, lessons learned or best practices or recommendations that you can share with us based on your time at the ACCC that you feel might be helpful for future international tribunals?
Yeah, I think we were brought in for case 3 and 4, but towards the, 2015 was towards the tail end of the, because the investigation had been ongoing for quite a number of years. But I think and we were brought in primarily because there was the SGBV component to it. And as you know, the ICC has, it has been established that some countries, in some states, sex and gender-based violence will be used as a weapon of war. So it is a standalone, and investigated as a standalone. And so I think that would have been really great to have that gender perspective from the very beginning investigations, because we had some amazing investigators from many countries like France and Belgium and other places, like amazing investigators. You know, when we came in, we were the first women that complemented the team, because I think a balanced, more balanced gender perspective from the beginning would be a good thing. But also a more in-depth education on some of the social issues that are as a result of conflict. Because as a Canadian police officer, there are some things that when they happen here, we all mobilize and we, you know, and it will happen to one person. But sometimes in post-conflict countries, you'll find that exploitation, like children and marginalized people, is more to a much greater degree. And so it's very difficult for when you don't have that in your frame of reference. For me, I think what benefited me was that I had already been doing work with pre-deployment training for UN peace officers on, especially on GBV prevention in Sudan and other countries. So I was prepared for some of the situations I might encounter, whether it was from previous case files or from the case I was investigating, or from just seeing some of the social issues that exist.
Okay, so based on your work at the ECCC, what do you think the significant challenges will be for future courts that are handling mass atrocities?
I think the biggest challenge is resources, because if you look at in some post-conflict countries, partners go in to go in, I don't think they get the full magnitude of what's happened, and so there are a lot of one thing I found was some of the witnesses were weren't happy because they felt that the people that should have been punished were not being investigated, and for them they were looking at neighbors and living next to someone who is my neighbor now but was the perpetrator during that time. It was very difficult because it was hard to explain to them that we're looking at this from an enterprise level, not from individuals who were perpetrated the crimes. But also I think I don't think they can fully investigate the magnitude of is that loss and what happens. So I think the biggest thing is resources.
Yeah, that definitely makes a lot of sense. Any experiences that you had at the ECCC that maybe changed your perspective or your way of looking at things?
Not really, but I was actually very struck by the incredible tenacity of Cambodians, and just I didn't know what to expect when I went in, because I'd never been to Asia before or that part of the world before, and I'd read about what had happened in history books and of course preparing for the mission, but I wasn't prepared for just the how amazing the people they are. I can't say it was all. There were times when I did experience some people that were unfriendly, especially in the mission field. But for the most part, 99% of the time, the people were just welcoming, and you know, I couldn't get over how they had just picked up and moved on after having been through something so incredibly, difficult. So, it was difficult to think of, you couldn't think of them as victims, rather to me, they were survivors because they had survived. But I think I remember having a conversation with a witness that had never talked to anybody about what she'd been through. And I said, and she asked me why. And I said, well, if you don't tell the story, and if your children don't know, history has a potential of repeating itself. If for nothing else, just to make sure that there's a record of what happened.
Yeah, that's definitely something that's struck me since I've been here too. It's pretty amazing that people were able to go through all of this and then keep going at all, let alone try and work on these trials and do something about it.
They just keep going. I used to where I used to set up when I went on field missions, there's a little town that I'd set up at a hotel just by the Mekong River, and in the evening I'd take a walk, it was like the whole town was by the riverside of just, having dinner and doing aerobics, and the men were hanging out, and the kids were playing, and I thought, my word, it's when you're sitting at home in Canada, it's easy to think that, especially post what these people went through, but you look at them and they have such a strong sense of community. It's just incredible, such a strong sense of community, and I'd often just walk by just to experience that, because I was just amazed at how the life happens around the community.
Absolutely. So looking forward a bit, what do you think the major impacts of the CCC will be, both today and maybe say 20 years from now in Cambodia?
I think that you cannot underestimate the recording of the story having been told. I mean, I know people want trial and people were found guilty. However, the story have been recorded, and I know your organization is instrumental in doing that. I think that's the biggest thing. I think that's the biggest impact. I spoke to a lady who said that up until the time she talked to me, she had never even told her children what she had gone through. This is the first time that what she's experienced will be recorded. And I think that it's the impact will be.
Sorry, Elizabeth. If you can hear me, you actually cut out for a minute there. Can you take us back a few sentences?
No, I was just saying that I think the impact will be felt, maybe not immediately, but I think it already has been. It's just for the story have been, the stories have been, the experience, the lived experiences have been told. And as I said before, I said many, many times to many witnesses that were reluctant, and when they did speak to us about when the story is told, and what happens exposed, it loses its power over you. And also, the children can integrate that story into who they are, because sometimes the societies, they move on and they bury the story, but then the children have the story in their DNA. They just don't know why their social issues, they don't understand. But once they know, they actually know what they, you know, what they they're dealing with, and healing can take place.
Great. Well, thank you so much for sharing all of that with us. That is the end of our questions, but is there anything we haven't talked about that you think it's important for us to know or that you would like to say?
No, not that I can think of. Just that this was one of the most life-changing experiences for me. I mean, I've been involved a lot in international training and peacekeeping initiatives, but this one was very near and dear to me, I think because I spent a year there and just got fully integrated into the Canadian, the Cambodian culture. I don't think one can ever be the same after having been exposed to the hearts of the people there. And I'm just really grateful that I was a part of it.